Vaccination rates are some of the highest in the world in Australia. There are pockets where they do fall below what we do need for herd immunity, so the Northern Rivers, Northern Beaches, Eastern Sydney can be a bit problematic. But by and large, the vaccination rates are pretty high, and the problems that we have in Australia certainly aren't the same level as we see in North America or France or some of the other countries.
You've recently undertaken a exploratory pilot study looking at why attachment parents in particular have debates as to whether to vaccinate or not to vaccinate. Why did you choose the attachment parenting style in particular?
Basically, it was a convenient sample to actually use to explore this issue, because we know that attachment parents do have a debate on vaccination, whether they should, whether they shouldn't. They have variable views. Probably about half do, probably about half don't. Compared to the general population where you've got 95% of people doing it and 5% perhaps questioning it, it's much easier to find an equal number of pro and anti people in that attachment community.
Taking a step back, how did you define attachment parenting?
Well, attachment parents are a self-identified group, so they're a pretty close-knit community. There's a lot of interaction via social media, in physical presence too. So if you go to a place like the Northern Beaches, there are usually weekend meetups. This is a theory of parenting that's based largely on a book by Dr. Sears, an American physician who advocated, I guess, a natural approach to parenting, co-sleeping, physical touch, the parent always being present around the children, a number of these other factors.
And what is it about attachment parenting that makes them question vaccination?
Well, I'm sure there are a number of factors, and that was part of what we were trying to find out. So there's a lot of assumption that because attachment parenting is a bit more natural, it's that natural approach to parenting, and natural approaches to health aren't consistent with vaccination. There's some assumption that it's any alternative kind of lifestyle choice is not consistent with vaccination. The reality is there's a lot of assumption, but we didn't really know, so we were trying to find out.
So you weren't interested in whether parents did or didn't vaccinate. You were more focused on what influenced them and who influenced them to make that decision. How many parents did you look at in the study?
Okay, so this was an exploratory study. So it was just four focus groups of 20 parents in Sydney and Brisbane. We had a lot of issues with recruitment initially, so we actually ended up recruiting on our third try. the no jab, no pay legislation sort of got debated while we were trying to recruit, and every time we had a focus group ready to go, Scott Morrison went on TV and made a statement, and that would cause people to withdraw because it is a very emotive and, there can be a lot of emotion thrown around the debate, and that can obviously help, people clam up about what they want to do. You know, some people don't want to be judged for their choices. Some people in an attachment parenting group, for example, might think that because they support vaccination, there might be people that will attack them for putting their child at risk, these sorts of things.
So what and who was influencing their decisions?
Well, I think the key thing that we actually found out was that health practitioners play a very, very small role.
So that's like your GP.
So GPs were not involved at all in the discussion. And if they were involved, they were generally seen as not particularly helpful. We had a parent who was very, very pro-vaccination now, who had been anti-vaccination historically, and she actually relayed that, she thought that if she hadn't spoken to a GP about vaccination, she actually would have been pro-vaccination far quicker than she'd actually been. So sometimes the approach to communication can actually tell people, can influence the way that people actually make their decisions. So not being able to have a conversation with a healthcare provider. So a lot of the parents relayed trying to raise the discussion with the healthcare provider and being shut off. And so that forced them to find information elsewhere. But ultimately, this was something that, the attachment parenting group by default, I guess, is a group that sort of comes about from people questioning conventional approaches to anything. So when they make any decision around their child, they don't necessarily just go the conventional route. They might end up at the conventional route, but they don't choose it as their default. They do tend to research whatever they do. So, self-study was probably the biggest factor.
And what about these fence-sitters who have information from both sides? What made them choose one side or the other?
Well, this was something that was really interesting because it was really the way that the benefits of one side over the other were communicated. And what we found were the anti-vaccination groups tended to emotionally connect a lot better with parents than the public health groups did. So public health, the messages on vaccination tend to focus more on facts. They tended to be very cautious about relaying any risks, and there are risks to vaccination. They're very, very small when you look at the benefits, but there are some risks. But the fact that these risks weren't communicated and then the parents would find them, even in government material, you know, these small risks of redness or, you know, those sorts of things, you know, made them question what their doctors were saying.
Or weren't saying.
And just even the ability to have a conversation. So when they'd go to New South Wales Health or they'd go to their nurse or their doctor, the conversation would be shut down because the doctor was convinced that there was nothing to discuss about vaccination because the case was so clear cut. Whereas when they went to an anti-vaccination group, it was more of a, yes, we understand that your children is very important, that you have concerns, these are understandable concerns. So that's sort of a, basically, if you look at it from a marketing and advertising perspective, everything that marketers and advertisers tell companies to do, the anti-vaccination groups were doing, and everything they tell companies not to do, the public health groups were doing. So
just to quote you off air, you said parents don't think in facts.
No, parents don't think in facts. So when you have a child, everything, even small risks become blown up disproportionately because they're your child and you don't want to put them through any harm. And if you look at some of Julie Leese's work, for example, this failure, I guess, to even discuss the small risks in vaccination, and a lot of, you know, there is a reason for that. A lot of people are concerned that if they relay risks, that these risks will be thrown blown up disproportionately. But What other work in Australia has actually shown is that not disclosing these risks can actually make parents even angrier once they find out about these risks, even if they're tiny things like, you know, redness or irritability that can happen after, you know, temperatures that can happen after a child. But most of these things are resolved very, very quickly. There's a, you know, there's a very, very small chance that pretty significant damage can be done with vaccination. But ultimately, you know, you choose one risk over the other, and not giving them a vaccination puts them at a greater risk of much more dangerous events in the first place. But it was that communication of how these things are put forward to parents that was a very, very clear difference between groups and actually did influence decision-making from one group over the other. And even little things. So we tend to think of the anti-vaccination community as unscientific. One of the things that I thought was really interesting was the information that they were provided by these groups was referenced. Right. Whether it was referenced correctly or cited correctly is one thing, but it looked like it was a real research document. The stuff they were given by New South Wales Health or their general physician. So, you know, it's either the small information sheet that comes in the vaccination packet that's actually written by the drug company, or it's a pamphlet from New South Wales Health that just talks about benefits but doesn't actually have a reference list down the bottom. So, you know, these sorts of things come into play, which, you know, we don't tend to think of the anti-vaccination group as more scientific, but it certainly looks more scientific to a parent that perhaps doesn't know science as much as a scientist does.
The no jab, no pay rules did come into effect on January 1 this year. From your research, did any of the parents discuss whether this would be an incentive to get the vaccinations?
No, not at all. It was, you know, these people aren't making the decision financially. So there was a lot of, I guess, concern that they would have to try and find the money somehow. The reality is, too, a lot of people that don't vaccinate in Australia are wealthier than perhaps, particularly in the attachment parenting group, than the average population. So they can probably afford, you know, to pay those extra costs. But, you know, there were also things that were brought up, like informal daycare, which actually turned out to be even cheaper than the no jab, no pay subsidy. You know, an unemployed mother sort of, you know, agreeing to look after everyone else's unvaccinated kids for $50 a day or something like that. So, you know, the solutions had already been found to these things. So there was certainly no, you know, people were upset and they were disappointed that this had been done, but it certainly hadn't wavered their decision in any way.
What do you think governments can do to encourage the anti-vaxxers to vaccinate that very, very small?
Yeah, well, I think one thing we need to do is really have a look at the reality of the situation. And the even with this anti-vaccination community in Australia, the vaccination rates are quite high. And I do tend to think that we perhaps think of the anti-vaccination group as being more significant than it perhaps is. What we found is that there were a lot of people that don't vaccinate that actually don't even like talking to the anti-vaccination groups because they think of them as too crazy and too emotive. So, you know, so even the people that weren't vaccinating, the anti-vaccination groups weren't always, you know, influential in their decision-making either. So, you know.
And for another proportion of the group, wasn't access the main issue?
So access is a big issue. And we found this with this actually came from our work at Medicare Local, which is a different project. But the, you know, some of the areas of lowest vaccination are areas where you've got high casualisation of the workforce, high incidence of single parent families, low incidence of motor vehicle ownership, low socioeconomic status. And in these groups, it's, you know, the biggest issue isn't so much the, you know, the attitudes to vaccination. It's actually getting the time to vaccinate children. So if you are a single mother, you are working a casual shift, you have a appointment with your doctor, you've probably got a bulk billing appointment, which is hard to get, and you have to do these weeks in advance, and you're given a choice, you know, your boss rings you up and says, you know, I've got an extra shift for you, do you want to take it? And that's really ultimately going to be more important for putting food on your family's table, then, you know, these sorts of things can get overlooked and they often don't get caught up. So these access issues are probably more important than the anti-vaccination issues that we see.
What's next for this research? It was just a pilot study. Is there plans to do any more research?
So because we focus on decision-making, ultimately what we want to do, and, you know, our hypothesis was that public health was communicating poorly with people that were sitting on the fence, so that, you know, not everyone was automatically anti-vaccination, but they were making a decision, and this side of the argument perhaps was more effective than the other. So what we are looking to do is expand this into bigger groups, because attachment parents aren't the only groups in Australia that have been linked with not vaccinating. There are groups that are, you know, using natural approaches to healthcare, complementary medicine users. You know, there's a big thing about chiropractic recently. But, you know, we want to actually look at more representative populations to see, you know, what across the spectrum in Australia actually informs decisions. Once we have this, we actually want to try and work out what kind of arguments are more persuasive. You know, it's a very overwhelmingly positive case for vaccination, and the case against it is very underwhelming. But I think the problem, you know, we shouldn't blame the success of anti-vaccination communicators on the inability of public health to communicate a very, very clear message effectively. We really need to, I guess, own up to our failures in communicating that message, because it is a message that should be communicated effectively but just isn't.